And when the firefighters eventually got it under control, I was able to go back and try to sleep again for a couple of hours. Someone from the letting agency was due to do an inventory later that morning, but I was so tired by the time he arrived that I left him to it. Cara was away for a couple of days, so she'd given me a key to let myself into her flat, and although I had been planning to go there first to drop off my bag, being at work suddenly seemed like a much better option than sitting there on my own. I worked at that time for a company that owned several art galleries, and when I emailed my boss to tell her what had happened and that I was going to be a bit late arriving at the office, she answered immediately, asking if I was all right and telling me to take the day off. I don't think what had happened had really sunk in by that time. The adrenaline was still pumping around my body, and although I was incredibly tired and shocked, I wasn't yet feeling particularly distressed, and my boss seemed to understand when I said I wanted to keep busy. So I did go into work, and when I got there, I was sitting at my desk talking to some of my colleagues about what had happened when Joe came over. Joe held a senior position as head of a department at the company I worked for, and although I knew vaguely who he was, I had never spoken to him before.
"I heard about your experience this morning," he said, "and I just wanted to make sure you're okay."
He seemed genuinely concerned, so I assured him that I was fine, apart from being tired and finding it a bit difficult to process what I'd seen. The overturned cars, smashed windows, looted shops, and people running riot through the streets.
"I still think you need to go home," he said. "You've had a shock, and when it catches up with you, home is the best place for you to be."
He was right about the shock catching up with me. The adrenaline was already starting to subside, and as it did so, I was overcome by an almost paralyzing weariness. So Joe got me a taxi, which the company paid for, and half an hour later, I let myself in to Cara's flat, with barely minutes to spare before exhaustion finally kicked in. I sent Joe an email before I fell into bed, thanking him for the taxi and telling him he'd been right about home being the best place, which he answered immediately, saying,
"It's fine, don't worry about it. Just have a good rest. Joe, kiss."
I don't sign off emails or texts with a kiss, except to family and close friends, but I know a lot of people do. So it probably wouldn't have seemed particularly odd that Joe had done so, if it hadn't been for our relative positions at work, and for the fact that we'd only spoken to each other for the first time that morning, although I was too weary to wonder about it by then. I'd just finished reading Joe's email when Cara's mum phoned to check that I'd been able to get into the flat and that everything was okay. It was while I was talking to her that the impact of the whole traumatic experience finally hit me, and I had to end the call because I couldn't stop sobbing. Then I went to bed and slept, without waking until the following morning. Joe made a point of coming to see me the next day, to ask if I was feeling better and if I'd managed to sleep. He sat on the edge of my desk in the large open-plan office for about half an hour, talking about what had happened and studying the diagram he asked me to draw to show exactly where the flat was in relation to where the rioting had kicked off in the street below. Part of my job involved setting up exhibitions of paintings and sculpture at various galleries around the country, and although I hadn't had any direct contact with Joe before then, he was ultimately responsible for my team. So there was nothing unusual in the fact that we were both included in the emails that were sent round to everyone a couple of days later, suggesting we should all meet up for a drink after work one evening. We didn't get the chance to talk to each other on that occasion, however, because I was held up at the office and didn't make it to the bar until after Joe had left. Meanwhile, what only a determined optimist would have referred to as my love life was barely ticking over. Anthony, the married man I was seeing, had only been to my flat once during the few weeks prior to the night of the riots. But based on the emails and texts he occasionally sent me, and on a great deal of wishful thinking, I still considered myself to be in a relationship with him. Not that my situation with Anthony had any relevance to how I felt about Joe. Although Joe was friendly and seemed very pleasant, I wasn't interested in him in that way. So I was surprised to receive an email from him one day when I was doing some research in a large art gallery in London, asking if I'd like to meet for a quick coffee after work. Unfortunately, I can't.